Some potential jurors walked in. There were 50 unfamiliar faces, and 12 of these people may have a profound effect on the direction of our business and our lives. That was what I wrote in my notebook that first time watching them walk in.
So why would two guys leave comfortable jobs, move across the country, and start a business in an industry they don't know, a place they don't know, and could it be successful?
We're Dale and Brian Carmi. Join us as we share our story and inspire you to become people of impact.
Welcome to the Impact Without Limits podcast.
Hey, welcome everybody to the Impact Without Limits podcast. This is Dale Carmi here, sitting with my brother Brian.
Hey everybody, welcome
and
back.
We are, we kind of alluded to it at the end of the last episode, but guess what? We are headed back out to California for trial. I think the trial was set to start March 8th, or we show up in court. I mean, there's some proceedings and things, so we are supposed to fly out to California on Saturday, March 6th, and we were going to meet with our attorneys on Sunday, pre-trial prep. But interestingly enough, before we went out there, Brian, what did we do the week before trial?
Listen, when this is coming up, your head's down preparing. You're not thinking about anything. Oh, wait, no, that's not right. We actually find ourselves the week before, the Monday before trial starts, 7 days before, in Mexico City.
Mexico City.
And we were down there. We met a gentleman named Mario, who was setting up as a dealer for us.
Yeah, he'd bought product from us multiple times over the last three years, and so, we were going down to meet with him and kind of get him started as a dealer. I mean, he'd sold product, but we wanted to go down and visit with him.
Yeah, so it's just crazy to think, again, all these things, we're still trying to run business, still trying to do things, and here we are taking an international business trip. We're in Mexico City, a very unique experience being just in the heart of the city. And that's a huge sprung.
Oh my
city.
Goodness.
It was just crazy.
It's like nothing I've ever seen.
But we're doing that. And realistically, we probably should have been in California preparing for trial.
I think we're jumping in our time machine, Brian, and going back. Probably would have spent that week in California. However, I will say, how many times up to this point had our court date been pushed?
Well, we just said, I mean, last one,
it was at least four times we had had a court date that got pushed, delayed, moved. So I think there was a certain part of us that were like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But this time, you know, we get back from Mexico City and we don't get the call saying, court date has been pushed or the everything's been moved. So we fly out to California, and I remember going down and meeting with David and I think Terry and team at their offices Sunday.
Before, do you remember we got in Saturday night, right? And we met Joe at the airport. And we were going out.
So we're flying in there, and David was already there. I think David had been out a day or two early because they were working prepping. So Dave says, "Hey, I'll pick you guys up at the airport." We're like, "That's great." So Dave picks us up, and then we're waiting for Joe. And so Joe tells us, hey, he landed. He calls and tells us. So as he comes walking out of the airport, we met him down your baggage, and he's walking towards the car like,
Joe, your bags.
You got to get your luggage. Because here's Joe walking. I think he had a briefcase and a little carry-on bag. Joe's like, luggage? I brought carry-on. And we said something like, Joe, what about your suits? And he replies,
I have a suit.
I have my suit in my carry-on. Now, I want you to notice, he did not put an S on the end of
singular.
Suit.
It was definitely
He didn't
singular.
Say, I have my suits in my carry-on. He said, I have my suit. So a couple things. One, a funny thing happens to a suit when it's stuffed in a carry-on with other stuff.
It was not a garment bag he was carrying.
And two, this is scheduled to be a 2-week trial.
Yeah.
We are planning to be in California for at least the next 2 weeks. And Joe has one suit and it's in his carry-on. Oh my goodness. Brian, you and I started laughing.
Yeah.
David was angry.
David was very angry.
What are you doing? He said, we got to look good in front of the jury. Joe's like, what? Oh, we'll be good. I got my suit.
I got different ties.
I think that was it. I have different ties. He didn't even say different shirts. He said different ties. So we're like, okay, here we go. It was comic relief. I remember laughing, but man, David was not happy. So we get together Sunday. We're prepping for trial. Bri, it's kind of a blur. I don't even remember. What do you do when you prep? They're maybe asking us, prepping us for if you get asked this question, what you want to say, what have you. I don't know.
Yeah, and we're trying to help our attorneys like to define the line of questioning because you have to be. We don't want to get into a legal class, but very specific in the way you ask questions, and you have to build to get to a case, and so we're trying to figure out the questions to ask the other witnesses, questions to ask our witnesses, what witnesses we're bringing in, and what we want them to talk about.
Yeah, and remember this: we have evidence we want to be put in, but to get evidence in, you have to have a question or have
there has to be a basis,
witness. Yeah. You're right. Bring something forward that enables you to enter this information.
I do believe the legal term is foundation.
Foundation.
Yes. So we're trying to figure all this stuff out as we go, but we spend the day prepping. But as we are prepping for trial, we get a call with some unfortunate news. I guess maybe Joe brought that news with him.
I think
him
Joe brought it. I think Joe told us
that Eli, a friend of ours in Albuquerque, had passed away on Saturday. And I know we've talked about Eli a little bit, but just quickly, we should probably recap.
Yeah, so as quick as I'm able, which sometimes isn't very quick, Eli was the very first salesperson we ever had. He's the guy that came to our office and was asking questions about the turf. And then Brian said, you know, what do you do? And he said, oh, I sell turf. I sell this stuff. And you're like, dude, you just been shopping us for 20 minutes. You're the competitor. And you say, who do you sell for? And he said, oh, I sell for you. That was Eli's introduction. He saw our product, saw us, and he wanted to sell for us. So he came and told us he sold for us. So we ended up hiring him. He brought on Priscilla as our first office administrator, and he sold for us for a year and a half.
Yep.
And then as we came out of the bankruptcy of AstroTurf and the closing of Astrolawn Southwest, the creation of ForeverLawn and ForeverLawn Southwest, Eli and another gentleman that was kind of sales project management for us, Richard, they left us taking all the leads from two consecutive home shows.
You could say they swindled us.
Yeah, swindle would work. And they opened shop a mile down the road and started a new artificial turf company, and really took probably about $250,000 worth of sales and revenue from us from those two home shows.
That Eli was so instrumental in the beginning of our business. I mean, his coming on and selling, being commission only, was huge for us. It was like the highest of high and then the lowest of low.
Yeah, it was pretty low.
When at our lowest point, right, we have the company that's our supplier. We're trying to see if we can still survive. He doesn't just leave us, but he leaves us with our only other primary employee. And they leave and
take
$250,000 of the business
to kick off the year.
That was a very difficult situation. And you know, they went and they competed against us for a couple of years. And then that business had some problems and started to crumble. And about that time, Eli was, he had some,
he was a cantankerous
old man. But he didn't have a lot of family. His son and ex-wife had died in a car wreck.
Yep.
And so he had no other family. So as things started to go south for him and that business started to go south, and he actually found out he was diagnosed with cancer. He came back to us, and, you know, at first it was trying to mend fences just a little bit on the personal level. And we realized he needed some help. He had an old car, that needed some work. I think we helped with that at one point. And then we realized he just needed some help. He just needed money. And so a couple times we just, you know, lent him money.
Right.
And we realize at this point, we're not going to get this money back and we're okay with that, but we're just trying to help him. But you know, there's sometimes when you give people money that doesn't feel good to them. Right.
And right. We wanted, I mean, Eli was a very self-sufficient person. And so what we thought is, look, instead of just writing Eli a check every month to help him, you know, cover his medical bills and things, he was, as he's dealing with this cancer, let's just hire him. So we're back in Ohio at right. this point now. We still have the office in Albuquerque. Joe was still in Albuquerque. And so we had Joe. We said, Joe, go talk to Eli, bring him in.
And Joe and Eli overlapped just a tiny bit on the front end. I mean, Joe wasn't like friends with Eli really before, but he really stepped up while yes. we were in Ohio, and he became
Eli's
conduit and connection yep. to Forever Lawn. And really, on a personal level, Joe really stepped in and was a great friend to Eli.
Yeah. So we kind of reconnected with Eli in this. We paid him to come in and just make calls, just make follow-up calls to internet leads and things like that. And I think he did that. I don't remember how long, Brian. It was probably six months. A year.
Yep.
But also in that process, and I don't want to go too far down this path, but our families kind of loved Eli and cared about him, and our kids actually witnessed to him. And in the process of time, through multiple letters, multiple phone calls, multiple discussions, and as he was sick, his regular nurse or his hospice nurse, somebody. Yeah. It was with him was also Christian, and Eli ended up giving his life to Christ.
Yeah.
And was really, it was just kind of a neat process.
Yeah. And Eli would always, you know, we're back in Ohio, and I remember he would call, and it was always at the most inopportune time. Yeah. I'd be at a Friday night football game. Right. And the phone rings and it's Eli. And at this point, he's sick, right? And if you've ever dealt with somebody, a loved one that had cancer, and you've gone through this, it's a difficult process. And he was clearly in a terminal stage. He was not going to get better, and he knew that. And so whenever he'd call, you wanted to take the call. And I remember taking calls at the worst time. And you talked about writing letters. We sent him books to have him read books, and we talk about the books. And just it was And again, for us, our father, we watched our dad go through that, mm-hmm. I guess it would have been 20 years previously. Yeah,
1987.
And so here we are watching Eli go through this process, and it was difficult. But what a neat opportunity to reconnect, to mend those fences and to have an impact. We talk about, you know, name of this podcast, Impact Without Limits, right? And the ability to have an impact in someone's life. It would have been really easy when he turned on us and went a different way that we just write him off and never accepted him back. And, you know, one, it probably took a little bit for him to humble himself and come back and say, hey guys, I made a mistake. I'd like to reconnect. And it took something for us to invite him back in and to be willing to help and share. And so, you know, we went through that. And again, that was an ongoing process for a couple of years. And, right at the time this trial's starting, we get the news that Eli's passed. And unfortunately, at this point, we're really his only friends or family. So his funeral ends up, they kind of ask us, when do you want to have this funeral?
Yep.
And we're like, we got to get to Albuquerque for this. We're in the middle of a trial. And so we start to try and figure out how to make this work. We end up scheduling the funeral. The court had dark days. We end up finding out the court dark days, you know, that they were closed. Sorry. Dark day means that they aren't in session. And Wednesday, the 17th. So the next week we set the funeral and we decide we will fly back to Albuquerque.
Yep.
For that funeral. Yep. So
we'll get there as we step through it, but yeah, that's never good news. And it's an emotional time as you're getting ready for trial and all of this. So that wasn't an exciting way to start necessarily, but we get through our trial prep, and now it's Monday morning, and we show up at court, and I remember writing, and I'm looking at my notes. I don't know if we wrote it down here, but I just remember I wrote my notebook. It's like, This is kind of a surreal feeling, walking into this courtroom and sitting down and seeing a judge in chambers. And it's like, this is really happening. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel good, because in the situation we're in, right, we're on trial. We're the ones being accused, I guess. And I don't know if it's the first half of that day or the first day, it's just meetings with the judge.
Yeah.
And motions in limine.
Yep.
And yes. Why don't you, Brian, Mr. Legal Consultant, tell us about the motions in limine?
Well, that morning, so we had been to the courtroom multiple times, but we had never started trial. So this time it's right. Like you go and
it's a different
you
feeling.
Don't know. Every time you go to the courtroom, you're really going to get called in. This time we do get called in, and then we're in front of the judge. We're getting to the point where our case is older, so you get, moved up quicker. And we meet with the judge the first step morning. The first thing he does is set the calendar. And he says, hey, we're going to be here for, it looks like, how many days? And we decide 12 days of trial, right? And we're like, wow, like that's 2 weeks? No, Dale. It's not that's 2 weeks.
4 weeks.
That is California. 4 weeks trial in time. California.
Court time.
And the reason was because they were closed every Friday. They had a few other days that were, dark days. And you have all these other things going on. We're like, holy smokes, we're going to be here for a full month. Of trial. We've got lives to live, families back home, business to run. But okay, I mean, we're going to have to figure out how that works. So then we start to go through the pretrial motions, and motions in limine just basically means what are the things that you can't cover with this, that you can't talk about in trial. And so we had all these things that we were trying to limit, and 6 out of 8 of them the judge threw out. But there were two things. One, for JSA, he granted that we couldn't talk about the bankruptcy, which didn't feel fair to us because it seemed like that was a really important thing.
It's a pretty big piece of the puzzle.
But we weren't allowed to talk about the bankruptcy in front of the jury. And then the second thing, the one we got, was no speculative damages, which means that they weren't just able to make up numbers. They had to come with
probably
some
could
basis.
Have been this much money. It had to be a proven amount.
So you good with the bad, right? Can't talk about the bankruptcy. That's bad. No speculative damages. That seems good. So let's move forward. And then, it's a trial by jury.
Yeah. So I think that was actually the end of the first day. I thought we got introduced to the jury that Monday, but I think when we came back on Tuesday, or did the jury come in on Monday?
It started in the afternoon. It started in the
afternoon on Monday.
Yep.
But that was weird. I remember the first time seeing the jury, and I wrote down 50 faces. Is that how many? Is it there?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So it is here. So I've written down, I'm just going to read this. The potential jurors walked in. There were 50 unfamiliar faces, and 12 of these people may have a profound effect on the direction of our business and our lives. That was what I wrote in my notebook that first time watching them walk in.
That was some foreshadowing.
And yeah. That is just a weird feeling. I don't know how to explain it.
You have no idea who those people are. And you go through this process called voir dire where you ask them questions and you get to kind of throw some out and, keep some, but whatever. But you have no idea what their background is, what they're thinking. But at some level, they are, they're the jury that's going to make the decision.
Right, they're
on
judging
your future.
Us.
Yeah. It's so odd. So you start out with 50, they narrowed it down to 18. And then you go through that process where you examine the jury. And so we start to ask questions, and I've watched enough court shows that I probably would maybe ask different questions, but we didn't know. And our attorneys did a decent job of trying to narrow this down. And we wanted people that were kind of pro business. We wanted people that maybe had a more, conservative bent to their ideology, that weren't, just wanting to stick it to the big man. That was our thought process. And, we end up bouncing. Three, you get, the ability, I think there's four that you can just kick out. And at least in this trial in California, there were four that we were allowed to just, no questions asked. We don't want that juror. So three, we got rid of, two, they got rid of. And I remember reading my notes that we were very happy.
We were happy. We thought we had the right ones.
We felt like there were some that they let through that we were surprised. Some that, that we really didn't like, we got out. And, you know, the other thing is,
there was one in there when we can talk about it later, but there was a guy that we completely misread.
We misread. We thought somebody was on our side. Might not have been, but there were several characters that popped out in the jury.
And look, we've already talked about, we've got Tom Landry. We got Mr. Miyagi.
We had Wilford Brimley.
We're always trying to match people to just things they make us think about. So on the jury, we had Stanley
from the office. we had very sleepy man, eyes always almost shut.
And we had Mr. Tumnus.
from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Right,
the Narnia series.
Yeah. I know you're thinking, wait, wasn't he like part
half
animal?
Man, half goat? Yes.
This juror didn't look like Mr. Tumnus.
We had Jerky Boy.
Jerky Boy was my dude. Jerky Boy, I don't even know his real name, but Jerky Boy was a guy who owned a business that sold beef jerky. Actually, not beef jerky. It was like mountain, like buffalo jerky and wild game.
It's a jerky, not beef jerky.
And we just, first of all, we're like, I'd like to get some of this jerky. But secondly, we're thinking, businessman
probably understand.
We had one that was a teacher. And I remember she tried to get off like, hey, my students need me. And we're like, boy, she seemed like a good one. We want to keep her. And the judge was just, he was hardcore on that. He's like, that's why they have subs. You know, you're here for a jury. You know, that's not reason to get out of jury. So he kept her on.
Yeah.
And she stayed on.
She probably wasn't happy.
No. But.
And then we had HOA man.
HOA man. We thought.
That's the one we missed.
That's some foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
We thought he was definitely going to be a friend. He was an older gentleman that served on an HOA in Arizona. And I remember he was getting ready to go back to.
Yeah, but I think Arizona. He'd run his own. Yeah, he was heading back to Arizona. I think he'd run his own business. I can't remember, but he was a businessman and sort of thinking, okay, this would be good. And then there were others. We didn't name everyone on the jury, but that was our cast of characters that we're going to be spending the next 4 weeks with, and we'll be deciding at some level our future.
I think that's just a note to the people that are casting the miniseries or movie based on this. That's who you're looking for. But again, you know, Dale talked about his notes. We have our personal handwritten notes as we went through this, and I have written down amazing, very pleased with initial jury selection. And again, just we were somewhat shocked. It was surreal that this trial was actually happening. We've seated a jury or, you know, but it's just odd. And you're sitting in that courtroom and, you know, we talk about this, but the feeling of formality that comes with it. And you realize that
you're like,
this jury is watching every move you make.
Yeah. It's like you're an adult, but you're in elementary school.
Well, so much though, the judge tells you, you can't chew gum.
You can't have your cell phone, sit up straight, don't talk. It's just a bad feeling. And then you got those that we say there are 18 jurors, but there are 12 that are active and 6 alternates. And they're just sitting there looking at you the whole time.
I think there were 4 alternates.
Is it 4 alternates?
Yeah, but either way,
Well, I don't know where the 18 came from.
Well, 18, they narrowed it to 18, and then we started weeding. It doesn't matter. But anyway.
There's some number of people sitting there looking at you.
But the point is, you're just sitting there, and you're realizing that our attorneys are telling us, like, your facial expressions, they're reading your facial expressions.
I remember the first time we walked into the courtroom, and I think it was David. Hey, shout out to David Standridge. Love you. He's like, dude, you're slouching. You got to stand up straight. So the next time I walk in, I like hold my shoulders back, and he goes, you look pompous. Don't hold your shoulders back like that. And I'm like, David, I'm just trying to walk into a courtroom.
Yes.
Can I just walk?
But
he was coaching me, and it was good.
I watch some of these shows, and often they're set in California, and some of the courtrooms in these TV shows, it's so reminiscent. It had the Wayne Scott
wood
paneled walls. You've got the jury off to the left, and then the plaintiff, JSA, was sitting closer to the jury, and then, you know, there's a gap, and then our team. So here we are.
Sitting right beside him.
And I remember there were times you're going in and out, and we're walking at the same time, and you end up holding the door for them. As they're walking in, and just such an odd, odd experience. Yep. But this thing is finally moving forward. It's happening. The trial has started, and we're we're going to find out over the next few weeks. Mm-mm-mm. Who's more believable, us or JSA?
Can we go back and write that check?
No. But wait, I think we're going to get another opportunity. It's okay.
All right.
So we'll pick up. So we get through the day one and, you know, we're just trying to figure out what comes next. And, you know, it's going to be opening arguments and we're going to get moving on trial next episode. Hey, if you're listening to this and you want to share this with somebody, a great way to share it is to, you know, just send a link to the show. You can also, you know, just take a picture, screenshot it, post it on social media. We'd appreciate you sharing. This is a fun story to go through. And again, it's a story about the trial that we went through, and it's very formative to ForeverLine. But man, there are lessons as we go through this.
It's formative in life.
We're sharing our experience, not to talk about ourselves, because we hope that as we go through this, you can learn something and enjoy the story and the ride as well.
Guys, hope you have a great week.
This is the Thread Army reminding you that faith looks up, hope looks ahead, and love looks all around to see whom it can help. Good day.